Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. What an intriguing debate we had yesterday, in which I talked about the fact that I want my team to win, but Kevin says it's okay to lose a game if he gets fantasy points that allows him to win the cash. Wow. How much sports has changed? Kevin would root for the Steelers to be eliminated from the playoffs if it meant he won the cash. Well, coming up today, we'll talk with Matt Shepard, play-by-play voice of Michigan basketball. He's going to join us live here in just a few minutes, and we'll talk about Michigan's trip to the Final Four. Dick Girardi joins us as well. Get his perspective on the Final Four. We have a lot going on. But first, above the noise, from his own personal fantasy camp at an undisclosed location, Dan Patrick.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2009 Ford Econoline cargo van E150 and a 2004 Volvo XC40 four-door twin turbo with four-wheel drive, both with the lowest price promise, so you gotta call 888-536-8017. 2012 Hyundai Elantra four-door sedan GLS reduced to $15,943. 2011 Subaru Legacy four-door sedan, just $21,498. And a 2010 Chevy Equinox four-wheel drive LTZ, $24,998. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Okay, so I'm doing a show with a guy that would rather see Ray Rice win the game from 1 yard out against his team because it means money for him.
No, I said in that particular case, if it was the playoffs at stake, I would give up the opportunity to win the money. I heard you in the open. That's not what I said. I said, you know, if it's the regular season and you
everybody
have a chance to come back.
Everybody heard the show. Everybody heard the show. They know basically in the end what a turncoat you are.
You twisted it.
I didn't twist anything. I received a great email, by the way.
I did like this one, yeah.
This is really good.
Yeah, it's Steve Jones at WKOK.com, the email address. Yeah. I like this one.
We're going to get Matt Shepard on here in about 2 minutes. That's what you're supposed to be doing now. You're supposed to be calling him.
I'm dialing the phone as we speak.
Yeah, brother. This is from, let's see, it's from Ryan Smith. Let's see here. Ryan writes, Hey, enough of the Yankee bashing. What happened to the whole I gave up being a fan thing years ago, which I have? It sounds like you're quite supportive, almost fanatical about the Red Sox. Only joking, of course. He says, but you could take it a little easier on the Yankees. We do live in a Yankee universe. Oh. It's amazing, though. Things change over time on that. On another note, what's the Penn State quarterback situation look like in the early stages of spring practice? Not sure if you can talk about it since he's not enrolled. What are the chances Christian Hackenberg has of winning the starting quarterback job? Ryan will address that in the next half hour. But before we get to that moment, we bring back my good friend and nobody I'm happier for right now than him, and that is Matt Shepard, Because on a personal point of view, he gets to do a Final Four in Atlanta, and I cannot be happier for you, Matt. I really can't.
Thanks, bud. I can finally walk in your shoes just a little bit because of all the football success you've had, so it's been fun.
It's been a lot of fun. Let's talk about the end of regulation against Kansas. What kind of guts did this team show overall to make up the 14-point deficit? You were courtside. What was the feel like?
Well, they were scoring pretty well on them. I wasn't worried about them shooting or them getting back in the game from that standpoint. I was worried at the other end, Steve. I'm wondering, will they get stops? Will they be able to somehow, some way, prevent Kansas from, if not extending a lead, at least trading baskets with them? And I thought that was the key. There's a couple of key points that I thought changed the game. I thought when Trey Burke forced a 10-second on Elijah Johnson, he casually brought it up, and Burke pressured him a little bit. And then there was a 50-50 ball that Michigan really didn't get to a whole lot on the night. But for some reason, this one they did. After a Mitch McGarry baseline miss, the ball came loose, and somehow Glenn Robinson went in there, and he was able to get it before Jeff Withey, and then he hit a reverse layup. And I thought right there, Michigan, if they didn't truly believe or understand what was at stake, then I think just about everybody in the building then finally did at that point.
We know Trey Burke, tough shot, end of the Ohio State game, rattled, came out. We know about the free throws, end of the Indiana game, and Chrysler opened the door, Indiana won. What do you think it meant for him personally that in the moment he hit that shot?
You know what I liked about it? Last year, Fayetteville in Arkansas, Michigan's down three, rattled out. There's been a number of times where that's happened to him, and he said that right after the game, Steve. I think it meant a lot to him. I think what impressed me more than anything is he's willing to take it. I mean, we've called enough sports where the guys we really like, we gravitate toward, are guys. It's not just about making the shot. I want the ball in my hands because I want to make the last shot. I want the ball in my hands because I'm not afraid if it misses either. There's a lot of people who might have shied away from that moment because what's going through their head? The same thing that's going through your head and my head and everybody else's. Step back three just doesn't work. Well, guess what? Had to have it, long arm in his face. The guy's got big-time guts. And a lot of guys, you know, when you're scoreless in the first half, okay, and you're the National Player of the Year and everybody thinks that you're supposed to be it, suddenly it's not going well for you. You come out, you start taking jumpers. I watched his demeanor when he came out of the locker room to see if anything was going in, and he was missing some jumpers and warm-ups, and I could sense a little frustration. I thought he needed to see one or two go in. He finally did that just before the horn sounded for them to start the second half, and he got some pretty clean looks the rest of the way, and I thought that was huge.
Outstanding freshman class, but give everyone a perspective of what Mitch McGarry meant in the recruiting process and what a priority he was for John Beilein.
Well, it was huge. I would take it one step further to a guy who left last year. Zach Novak was more important in the recruiting process. They're both from Chesterton, Indiana. Novak was telling McGarry how much Michigan could use him, but how much he would love Michigan. And I thought that was really important. It's funny how, you know, legacies or guys who have been there before, guys who can make a difference, are constantly making a difference. I don't care if it's football there at your school, basketball at Michigan in this case, even football at Michigan in a number of cases. Zach Novak helped Tim Hardaway become a better leader. He helped Trey Burke become a better leader. He helped seniors on the team right now who earlier in the year or even last year might have been pouting of not playing. He helped them understand what is best for this team, and it was really important that he stay involved in the recruiting process of Mitch McGarry as well to sell him on Michigan, sell him on what he could do, because earlier this season, Mitch McGarry was frustrated. He was frustrated because he wasn't getting a lot of post touches. And the coaching staff told him to be patient, hang in there, get in better shape. He cut out junk food like you and I are supposed to, but we don't. And he got in much better shape. and you could see it. He's running the floor better, and he's able to play for longer stretches.
And for those of you who've never met Matt, I can tell you right now, Matt hits the gym, okay? I got your back on that one.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
No problem, pal. He had a great stretch midseason, but the Penn State game in the tournament, he had the double-double in the first half. It really seems to have ignited McGarry.
No, I think it's a really good point. Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's a big kid. I mean, he's just a kid, though. I mean, I was watching at breakfast the other day, and he's just having fun with everybody. That's why I find it hard to believe that all these people are talking about him going pro. I think he truly loves, you know, the college atmosphere and everything that's going on. But, sometimes it's important for guys to – and there is a turning point for everybody, don't you think? I mean, when you gain that type of confidence and you realize, you know what, I can do this thing. I don't know exactly when it took place. I just know – as soon as he got in better shape, and as soon as he started getting better looks and gaining the trust of teammates, that he's taken off. I'm happy for him because I think he's a really great kid. He's a big, strong body inside. I also think, Steve, it really helped that guys like Jeff Withey and Travis Relaford, two seniors on a Kansas club that had been in the Final Four the year before and I thought would have acted differently instead, weren't afraid to mention Mitch McGarry by name and say that they thought they could dominate inside and that he really wasn't that tall and he wasn't that skilled. I thought it helped against Florida when Patrick Young echoed the same sentiments about Mitch McGarry and said it's all about Trey Burke. It really doesn't have anything to do with McGarry or that shooter who, for some reason or another, they didn't know Nick Stauskas' name, but I bet they do now.
I bet they do now is right. How much do you think Michigan has helped in this Georgia Dome situation by the fact that they had to go through Cowboys Stadium and the setup of Cowboys Stadium now going to the Georgia Dome with the court in the center?
Yeah, I thought at the beginning I was a little worried because these guys, when they showed up last week, they were trying to adjust to, you know, the football stadium lights, the backdrop, whether it would, you know, affect their shooting eye. Syracuse was at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., so they were used to an arena. Louisville was in Indianapolis. They're playing at Lucas Oil Stadium. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see when we go down there. It was one of the things that I thought the players, you know, shooters probably more than big guys, Steve. You know, shooters need to see that ball go in. They need to adjust to it a little bit differently. Nick Stauskas had some struggles when we first got down there and he shot around, I believe it was on a Thursday. He went down there and he was talking about how he was still trying to adjust his eyes and his shooting range and the depth of perception. But he found it pretty quickly. So we'll see if it matters that much by the time we get to Atlanta tomorrow night and end up starting shooting around Thursday or not.
Yeah, in fact, you notice what Rick Pitino did in the second half when he called the timeout up by just two. They were everything to the basket, 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 because, as you correctly state, Matt, around the basket it doesn't matter. There is no depth perception around the basket.
Yeah, I agree. And they're athletic enough, I suppose, where they can do that. Michigan probably relies a little bit more on jump shooters, so they probably want to get those shots up a little bit quicker and a little bit more extensive.
I know John has not had success against Syracuse, whether Canisius, Richmond, or West Virginia. But by gosh, if anybody knows how to play against the 2-3 zone, it's John Beilein. The advantage of at least his personal experience of what it means to this young team.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people keep bringing up. During halftime of the Florida game, Steve, there were a lot of people talking to me and tweeting about John Beilein, last time he was in the Elite Eight with West Virginia, he had a 20-plus point lead over Louisville and ended up losing in overtime. And, you know, my response is, well, that team is not this Michigan squad. John Beilein hasn't beaten Jim Boeheim, but you know what? Bill Self was 8-0 against Michigan in his career. A lot of it you and I saw at Illinois and then at Kansas. I don't know how much that factors in, but your point is a good one that he knows about the 2-3 zone. What does it take to beat a 2-3 zone? I mean, that's the common question. So I think you need multiple shooters. I think you have to have a point guard who has no fear of dribbling inside. You have to have a dump-off guy like Mitch McGarry. You have to be able to hit pull-up jumpers at the dotted line if you get by that first line of the 2-3. And I think Michigan has a lot of that. I'm not suggesting that they'll be able to do that with ease. Indiana has that ability, too. And the Hoosiers sure couldn't do it, which surprised me. But, you know, Michigan does have the remedy. I think they have better shooters from the wing than Indiana, and I think they have longer shooters. Syracuse is so long, Steve. I think that struggle, that really frustrated and hurt guys like Jordan Hulls and Kevin Farrell. Jordan Hulls is a hell of a shooter, don't get me wrong, but he's not as tall as Tim Hardaway, nor is he as tall as Nick Stauskas, nor are they as tall as Glenn Robinson. Michigan's going to have some choices here. Are they going to get some looks? I think so, but they're going to have to knock down those looks.
And the other part, too, is Michigan. How do you keep a 2-3 zone from setting up? You crush it in transition.
Exactly.
Michigan plays as well in transition basketball, I think, as anybody, Matt. Yeah, I think you'd agree with that.
Well, absolutely, and that's the thing. If you look at Syracuse, they've had some lulls offensively. I mean, they had it against Marquette. They had it against Indiana. You have to take advantage of it. So if Syracuse is missing shots, first thing Michigan's got to make sure that they do is they secure the rebound, and then they have to be able to outlet it well. And McGarry, to your point earlier in our conversation, he's such a good outlet passer. He really is. And he gets it and finds the guy as quickly as possible. Michigan will try to hustle up and get some of that transition game going for him. The thing that I respect so much about what John Beilein and the Wolverines coaching staff did is while everybody thought taking on Kansas, you would avoid Jeff Withey. You're going to have to pull up jumpers. You're going to have to make sure to do certain things against Jeff Withey because he's such a good shot blocker. He's better than Jared Bergeron, who you and I saw for way too long in the Big Ten. Michigan attacked him. I mean, Michigan found out where he does block shots, and they attacked him, and they weren't afraid to have their shot blocked. I'm not sure if that's the recipe for success against Syracuse, but I am confident that the Michigan coaching staff will try and find a way to beat it and then give Michigan an opportunity. It'll be up to the players to knock them down.
Matt, enjoy every second of it. Like they have earned it. I can tell everybody out there, for quite frankly, you've earned it. So enjoy every second of it, and we wish you and Michigan nothing but the best.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try and play a round of golf for you, okay?
That sounds great. Pull out the sticks. Have a great time, Matt. Matt, thanks. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Matt Shepard, what an outstanding job he does. Play-by-play voice, Michigan basketball. Time now for a update, bottom of the hour, an update at the bottom of the hour, news update here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Orioles lead Tampa Bay 2-0 that game in the top of the second. Phillies last night, that was not exactly a great start.
I wouldn't use the word stellar.
Except by Chase Utley. We're going to get wheels on.
Chase was awesome.
We're going to get wheels on tomorrow. How about that?
That's great. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I thought he was going to hit the cycle the way he was hitting last night.
Yeah. Dick Girardi on Thursday, by the way. Final four. Let's see. A couple of notes here. We'll talk about the Phillies here in a moment. First of all, Andy Enfield was hired as the head coach at USC. Gigantic raise from the $157,000 a year that he makes at Florida Gulf Coast to now nearly $1 million a year at USC. USC is not a great basketball job, except it's a high-paying basketball job. They do have recruiting roots. And he will play an exciting brand that may bring some people out to the Galen Center to watch them play. Now let's do a poll. How many of you think that Pat Hayden ever heard of Andy Enfield 3 weeks ago.
I was thinking that when I saw the signing today. I'm like, wonder if that would have been his choice a couple of weeks earlier.
Never heard of him. If he had, I'd be shocked. Okay? If he had heard of him, I'd be shocked. It is interesting that when you look at what's happened, Steve Alford's a good hire by UCLA. And I know he had committed 10 days earlier to a 10-year deal with New Mexico. I understand that. But he understands Southern California recruiting. He's done that. New Mexico has taken advantage of it. So he has some inroads with AAU coaches in Southern California. Along the way, according to written reports, Ben Holland had lost touch with as he gained more success. And then the past year, Holland tried to reopen those avenues, according to the stories. And at that point, they weren't interested in listening to him. Well, Alford evidently has those kind of connections. Alford has been a good coach in his career. He has not been a great coach, but he's been a good coach in his career. At Iowa, he was, first of all, it's what it was then Southwest Missouri State that's now Missouri State. He did a very, very good job, which then opened the door for him to get the Iowa job, which he did. He left Iowa not very well liked. His tenure at Iowa was good at some moments, such as winning the Big Ten championship, winning 4 games in 4 days, very rocky with the press, very rocky with the fans. His wife, Tanya, did not light up the populace with how she reacted to certain things along the way. New Mexico ended up being a great fit for him. He got out of Iowa, he went to New Mexico, and did some very good things there. Now he has the UCLA job. We'll find out how he reacts in the bigger fishbowl again. Because in Iowa, you are the show in town. Iowa football and basketball has deep meaning to everybody in that state. Iowa State to a point, but it's still Iowa's state when it comes to football and basketball. More of their success drives the emotional engine of that state than the Cyclones. And that's why Kirk Ferentz has been so important for Iowa, succeeding Hayden Fry. And why Steve Alford could never get a toehold of the emotions of the people of the state there. Just could not do it. New Mexico, it seemed like he was doing very well there. Tubby Smith gets the Texas Tech job. Okay. Universal is without a head basketball coach today. Minnesota still does not have a head basketball coach. It is interesting when we talk about the deep-seated tradition of Minnesota basketball. When's the last time they won an NCAA tournament game before Tubby Smith? When's the last time they won one? 1997, the year they went to the Final Four. Okay. Except it's vacated. Why? Because they cheated. Vacated. It is a program. It's an interesting program at Minnesota in that they now have a gorgeous football stadium, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with the rent money they're going to get from the Vikings for 2 years in 14 and 15. Will they then pour that money into building a basketball practice facility? Because they don't have that. They have a women's ice hockey arena and a men's ice hockey arena. They have separate ice hockey arenas, but they only have one basketball court and no practice floor. Interesting. Flip Saunders, they wanted to talk to him about the job, Minnesota graduate, success in the NBA, said no. So I don't know what direction they're going in. Chris Collins hired it with Wes, and they were going on and on the other day about, you know, it's his time. It is his time to coach. But I'm not so sure I would have taken that job. I don't understand why. That one confuses me as to why Bill Carmody, whose style fit, was like, because Chris Collins' style is going to fit, and he's going to find out right away we're no longer at Duke. So, now yesterday we hit on an interesting topic where Kevin was about the cash. That really you have no loyalty.
That's not true. That's not true.
Excuse me. You have gone on this show and you've told me how you are... that you refer to the Steelers as we because you have a personal investment in them. You've bought
jerseys. That's correct. I stand beside that. I stand behind that.
Yeah, when push comes to shove, you'll root for Ray Rice to score against them if he's on your fantasy team.
In certain situations.
Certain situations?
In certain situations. That situation being... If I feel my team can come back and score and still win the game, or if they're winning the game by more than a touchdown, yeah, I'm going to root for my running back to get a touchdown, because it doesn't matter. My team's still going to win. My running back gets a touchdown, and it's a win-win. Now, if it's the difference, if it's, as you said the yesterday, late in the program, you said, what happens if it's, you know, late in the game, it's the last play, and your running back gets in for a touchdown, and that's going to cause your team, the Steelers, to lose a playoff spot. Then I'm going to root for the playoff spot.
You sound torn.
No, because I've had this happen. I know exactly how I would react.
You've had that. You sound torn.
I've had this happen, so I don't have. I'm not torn.
Daddy needs a new Samsung. Come on, get there.
Daddy needs to go on vacation. That's why I've used that before. See, that's what makes playing fantasy football and fantasy baseball really tough, because you do find yourself conflicted on how to root.
But I have no conflicts.
No, you don't, because you've never played, so you can't comment. Ha. Huh.
No, I'm not perfectly comfortable where I am. I yesterday done a great job bringing people to the game and having them hang in game. Now let's get to something that's serious as opposed to kidding around with that. And I know you think fantasy is serious, but...
not that serious.
But this is serious. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott does not believe that coordinator of officials Ed Rush should be fired for telling officials to target Arizona coach Sean Miller during internal meetings before the conference tournament. I do not find anything that rises to a fireable offense or breach of ethics or a breach of integrity of officiating or the program, Scott said. Scott's comments came one day after the Pac-12 concluded that Rush was joking when he offered a group of officials $5,000 or a trip to Cancun if they hit Sean Miller with a technical foul or ejected him during the conference tournament. Well, Miller was hit with a technical foul during the semifinals against UCLA for arguing a late double dribble call against Wildcats guard Mark Lyons. Arizona lost the game 66-64. Miller went on a memorable postgame rant about the technical foul, saying, he kept repeating, all I said was he touched the ball. He did so 5 times in a row, he said this. He touched the ball. Miller and UCLA coach Ben Howland received pregame warnings regarding their sideline behavior and were instructed several times during the game to remain within the coaching box. Howland confirmed to ESPN that he was warned to stay in the coach's box prior to the game. It should be pointed out that Larry Scott has said that Miller was hit with a technical, not for saying he touched the ball. He said he didn't swear, but he was fine. He was hit with a technical for leaving the coaching box. Miller was also fined $25,000 by the Pac-12. Not $25,000 for his post-game comments. He was actually fined $25,000 for berating an official at midcourt after the game, seen on TV, and for berating somebody in the hallway before going into the press conference. Miller, by the way, has already paid the $25,000 fine. There's a lot here to talk about and deal with. We'll do that in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. What to do now with the Pac-12? It's a serious situation. Look, too often, too many fans and broadcasters place blame on officials and then law for their. Iowa State fans, by the way, irate at the Aaron Kraft call. What cost Iowa State the game is not the Aaron Kraft call. It's their inability to rebound and give Ohio State how many chances down the stretch? It had nothing to do with officiating. It had to do with their inability to get rebounds. And Kraft stealing the ball. Two people, and I'll be honest, I will go to whether it's quarterback club or hoops club. Every single time I go there, every time, without exception, there is a question asked to the coach about the officials. Every time. Officiating is extremely difficult. And I will be frank with you. I put officials on my own personal rank. It's only my personal, and Dick's the same way, in A's, B's, and C's. A's are the elite guys, the best. You look at the game, hey, look, if they miss a call, it's only because, hey, look, they just plain missed it, but nine times out of ten, they're in great position. They're fair. They know how to treat coaches. They know how to treat players. They're not going to be too quick. They're going to be a little more level-headed. Bs are that next level down. There really isn't a very deep pool of Bs. But there's a heavy pool of C. Not quite in the right position. Get fooled. Flopping does not fool an A official. Flopping fools a C official. How about that? Now, I am not going to sit here and tell you which officials I have in my A category, B category, or C category. But you can move categories. There have been guys that have started out in the C category that I now consider to be an A, just through experience, got better, and so forth. Those who have been in an A category but then slid back to B usually end up retiring quickly, that I've seen. But the smallest pool are Bs. There's a heavy pool of C's, and there's an okay pool of A's. And you're seeing the A's. I mean, you can tell. Look at the names that are put out there at this stage of the NCAA tournament. And the ones that have graded the highest are going to be the nine officials that you're going to see work the final three games of the year. So officiating is not great. It's not perfect. And they need to expand, in my opinion, what they do with video replay. Who took the last out of
Ask that again.
It's the ball last going out of bounds.
Okay.
And the other one is goaltending off glass. Can't tell. There's no way you can use replay in terms of downward trajectory. You can't do that. But you can whether the ball hit the glass or not. And the time to do that on the goaltend off glass, right, you can do that during commercial breaks, which is fine. Not slow the game up. Those are the ones where I think you can expand. Who touched the ball last out of bounds? And did the ball hit the glass before it was then touched by the defender? I think the shot clock should go from 35 to 30. I think the five-second call should be eliminated. I also think there needs to be a better job done of understanding by an official what a position is, and no movement should be allowed by the defender. None. I don't want this last second I jumped in there. And that's where the C official gets fooled and the A official doesn't. So officiating, yes. Is it great? Not particularly. Is it difficult? Extremely. But too often, fans blame the official for losing the game. You got to look at the game. There are 50 other things that kept your team from winning.